time would fail me to tell of Gideon and of Barak and of Samson and of Jephthah, of David also and Samuel and of the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. Women received their dead raised to life again, and others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. And others had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings, yea, moreover, of bonds and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn asunder, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and in mountains and in dens and caves of the earth. And these all, having obtained a good report through faith, received not the promise, God having provided some better thing for us, that they without us should not be made perfect. Heavenly Father, we thank you for your word, and Lord, thank you we can trust you and lean on you and look to you, Lord, and that you're aware of all we're going through in life, and Lord, that nothing happens by accident. You have a plan, you have a purpose for each and every one of us here. Lord, even through events and circumstances that may seem out of our control and out of your control, Lord, help us to understand that, Lord. Help us to live a life that's pleasing to you. Lord, help us to not be afraid to stand, to not live a nominal Christian life, Lord, but to walk in victory that we have through you and that the world can see. And we'll ask you now to speak to each heart here today. Lord, help us this morning. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. I named the message Not Nominal, and I'll share this with you in a few minutes, but I was inspired by a video that we watched with the men on Tuesday night in our prayer group, and I'll talk to you about that in a few minutes. But we look in the text that we see this morning, you know, I didn't read all of it. Hebrews chapter 11 is called the Hall of Fame of Faith, so to speak. It's the faith chapter in the Bible, and a whole lot of individuals named before this, and then we kind of got a bigger group of people here that exercise faith in God and what they accomplished. And, you know, there was some great victories. It talked about victories in battle and facing the lions. We know about Daniel in the den of lions. Then some people escaped danger, and then it said some widows had their dead raised to life. But I want you to notice something just a little bit, and I happen to catch this. I've read this this chapter quite a bit. It says in verse 35, it kind of changes course. You know, before that, we're talking about subduing kingdoms and working righteousness and stopping the mouths of lions and violence of the sword, quench that and escape the edge of the sword, out of weakness made strong, wax valiant in fight, turn to flight the armies of the aliens, women receiving their dead raised to life again. And then it says this one word, it says, and others were tortured, not accepting deliverance that they might obtain a better resurrection. And it says others had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings, yea, moreover, of bonds and imprisonment, and they were stoned and they were sawn asunder. They were tempted, were slain with the sword, and they wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute and afflicted and tormented. You know, it's kind of looked like two different groups of people there. You had the people that kind of like did great things and escaped great things and had a lot of good things happen. And then you got those people that didn't fare so well, it didn't seem like. And it seems like a place right there that you'd put the word but instead of the word and. But I got to thinking about that really good. I said, you know, you would say, but see, then it looks like this is because it's like when you put a but, it goes into the negative. See, you say, well, all this good stuff happened to these people, did great things, but there were some people that didn't fare so well. We saw on the video there, it was at a church and some people got killed and some people didn't. But it's not a but, it's an and. Because it's still the same thing. Both things were in God's will. Somehow. Now that's hard for us to understand what the difference was there. But all of them had faith in Jesus Christ. And you wonder, you know, well, how do they do that? How do people have faith? I was thinking, I thought, man, I was looking at that video this morning, and I said, well, I'd like to show that to the church. I don't want everybody to get nervous about coming to church. Man, you watch something like that. Well, one girl said, well, you know, I was kind of thinking about going back, but I said, man, you know, I'm not trying to run you off. I'm not trying to scare you. You know, stuff like this happens at other places besides churches. Tuesday night, the men's group, we've been doing a lot of videos about, like, just being the man that God wants you to be. And then one of the ones I watched beforehand two times ago, lessons back, was kind of just dealt with Christian things, you know, living Christian. And I was trying to find something. I'm trying to keep them in a certain time restraint, and that's not always easy to do. But I saw this video is put on by Voice of the Martyrs, and it's all about, and I just started this series Tuesday night, and this they're using some real-life things that's going on in the world today, but it's teaching major tenets of the Christian faith, and the one Tuesday night was sacrifice. But in the midst of that topic and a theme like what we just saw, some of the other topics are joy, sacrifice, joy, and you know, it's like, man, how is that possible? But I was looking at this one, and the one we're looking at had to deal with the Christians in Iraq. I don't know for you, about you, but in my mind, I just didn't realize that there was that many. I thought that of being mostly a Muslim country, but it's not. There's lots and lots of Christians, and they were showing mostly what happened in the town Mosul, which we see on the news all the time or saw on the news when that was going on. And ISIS came and was attacking the army in Mosul, and there was Christians living there, but what happened? The Iraqi army just fled, and they just left the city. So now ISIS came in, and they could do whatever they want. Now, you had two choices. You know, you could anybody that opposed ISIS, they either just killed you or ran you out of town. And the police kind of just put their guns down and said, hey, we're on your side. And so what happened? Mosul was completely taken over by the you know, ISIS, and there was a lot of Christians there. And ISIS started killing the Christians. They were beheading them. They crucified some, you know, probably a lot of things we don't know about, burned some of them alive and things. And some of them, they ran out of town. They didn't kill them all. Some of them, they drove out, but there was you know, those things. Rape was, you know, prevalent that. And what they did was, the name of this video is called, you can get it on the Right Now Media that we watch. You know, we have access to Right Now Media, this church does. It's called I Am In. That's what it's called. It's under most popular videos. It's I Am In. And then there's a symbol on there. And it's a U. It's kind of a fancy U. If you do it, somebody who's really good with a paintbrush could do it. And it has a dot over the top of the U. And what that is the Arabic letter N. That's the Arabic letter N. And it's I Am In is the title here. And the N means Nasara in Arabic, which is the word for Nazarene. And in the Quran, that's how Christians are identified with the N for Nazarene, a follower of the Nazarene, which would be Jesus, of course. And so that's how they identified. And it's kind of a reminder of how the Nazis marked out the Jews in World War II when they put the Star of David on their stores and on the house. And they had some interviews with Iraqi guys. One guy was a store owner, a Christian store owner. He's speaking through an interpreter, and they marked his store and they marked his home with the N. They put that on there. And, you know, I was thinking this is something that's going on in the world like right now. And there was thousands and thousands of them that had to flee. They had to go somewhere else, and they were elderly, and there was the heat, and they were moving, and they were taking things, and they had an Iraqi pastor, and they had some other, the Voice of the Martyrs were there, and they were trying to find people's shelter. I mean, people were trying to just stay under an awning that was on a storefront or something. They were living there. There's a real shortage of houses and food and everything. And they're all the Christians. And they were, but I'm going to tell you something. You saw something in their faces. There was some joy and things. But all they had to do to avoid it, to keep their life going on pretty normal. I mean, I'm sure it wasn't normal, what we would call normal. But all they had to do was deny Jesus Christ with their mouth. And they could have kept their stores. They could have kept their homes. They could have kept on living their life just like they had been doing that. But they didn't. But they didn't do that. And you wonder, well, why? Why wouldn't they? You know, you think, well, you know, I mean, we know as Christians, well, we're not supposed to do that. But when it's a real thing, I mean, when you get face down with the real thing, I was looking at about the same time this event took place was when the Columbine incident took place, and that one girl, they put a gun to her head and told her that she had to deny Christ, or they were going to kill her, and she didn't, and they shot her. If you got the if your Christianity in your life is strong enough at the real threat, when it's a reality that you would die for your faith, would you be able to stand? And I had this thought about this. I said, you know, let me get ahead of myself. I'll tell you about it in a second. You know, you think about why. And there was this one man said this. I'm in the right place. This one man said this. They had this. This guy could speak English good. And he said, listen, you know, we could have denied Christ. He said, but I'm going to tell you something. He said, I have joy. And the first thing that he said was, and this is what just stuck in my mind, and I could not get it out. I said, man, I got to preach a message on this. He said, I have joy that I'm not a nominal Christian. And I got to thinking about that. There is no over there. There are no nominal Christians over there. You're either the real thing, sold out, all in. Christianity is not something that you've just tagged onto your life like a club. That it's a living faith in Jesus Christ every single day. Listen, when you're running around and you've got no house, no food, no money, and you've got to put your faith and trust in Christ. But you know what I kept seeing? If you keep watching the people, you'll notice something kind of ironic about it. I mean, they're dragging. They got a suitcase with little wheels on them just like we. And they're going down there through the mud puddles with their suitcase. That's all they got. They had joy on their face. Man, I showed them worshiping God. Man, I mean, they were singing songs and raising their hands up. They were praising God. This one woman, she was just singing, man, and she had her hands up and she was excited. They were singing in the midst of all this going on in their life. Do you see that persecution forced the line there? You know, you couldn't be just casually a Christian. And I'm going to tell you, here's the thing. God never intended for us to be just a casual Christian. He never intended that. And it's the problem that I see in America, and I'll never forget this either. There's over the years, listen, I've heard thousands of messages preached, and thousands of them, and some of them I remember being there, remember the guy talking, and I can't remember a thing they said, but there's been messages in my life that I remember, you know, what the guy said or something about the message stuck in my mind. And I remember Brother Gibbs talking about the problem, one of the biggest problems with America and our Christianity or our dedication to Christ is, along those lines, was our prosperity. Our prosperity is our biggest problem because he said it this way, but I know what he meant. He said, we don't need God the same way that them people in Iraq. He didn't talk about Iraq, but I'm saying this. We don't need God the same way them people in Iraq do. But I want to put this on it. We don't think we need God the same way that we need. We need God, but our problem is we got a lot to fall back on, folks. Listen, man, I walk out of church here today. I walk out of church and never come back, never worship God. I'm going to tell you what, I'll probably still have a house and a roof over my head. And I mean, God might do something else to me because I am a Christian. He's going to chasten me real hard, and I don't want him to have to do that. But I'm just saying, if I could go home and I got my roof and there's some food in the refrigerator, I'm not praying about where am I going to sleep tonight, where am I going to eat tonight, what am I, you know what, we all pretty much could do that. We're not just praying about surviving here. You know, we're worried about other little things. 70% of Americans say that they are Christian, but less than half of the 70% that say they are, less than half say that religion is not important to them. It's not important. It's not a big important thing. They don't feel any real need for God. And why? Because of what we're going through in our life. There was an Iraqi pastor on the video. If you watch that video, he's on there. And he said right now, he said, I'm going to tell you, he said, you can go up to just about anybody, not an ISIS member, of course, but you can go up to just about anybody of the Iraqi citizens that and talk to them about Jesus. And he said, they'll listen. But you know what? He said this one statement. It stuck out to me in a video. He said, but before, they were too busy with their life. They were too busy with their life. Same thing going on right there. And listen, the same thing. It's not just out there. It's in here. It's in the churches. We just get too busy with our... Look at the church, man. What are we going to... Why don't you all just move over here and I'll just move down here? Huh? People out left and right, man, of church. And it's like that everywhere. I talk to pastors all over the place. People gone, coming and going, zoom, 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 zoom. Man, it wouldn't be that way if we didn't have no home to live in right now, would it? Huh? It wouldn't be that way if we didn't have any food. If our bank account had been all taken and banks was closed down, the pastor didn't even have any money. They didn't have no money because all the money was taken up. It's so different. And that's the problem that I see today. And most Christians, listen, are content with being a nominal Christian. Huh? Just content with where you are. I was sharing with one of the men that comes. We call it, his real name's Craig, but because of some of our men's memories, his nickname is Keith. I was talking with him Tuesday night after church service, after our prayer thing, and we were talking about this very thing that so many people are just content with where they're at, and there's not a hunger to go farther with God or get closer to God or find out. You know, we just get to a certain place and we just get there. And you know, listen, God uses stuff like what we saw on the video. And God forbid that. Listen, I don't want to be so nominal that God's got to put me in a furnace to get me to turn and call on His name and really put my faith and trust in Him. I don't want to have to go through a church shooting. I don't want to have a nation come over here and invade my country. One time I was preaching at a revival about that. I was talking about Samson being living so close to the edge of the promised land. He was right on the border town, you know, right close to, that's where most Christians live, by the way. They don't live in the center of the promised land. They get as close to the world as they can get and try to live that way. And I said, boy, how would it be if a nation came in and invaded our country and took over the government? And I thought, well, that's probably not a good illustration. We might like that one, but in reality, we would, you know. But just think if it came to that, and all of a sudden, man, here we are, refugees going down the road, and you know, I think our prayer meeting would be just a little bit stronger. I believe some people show up actually to that. Man, would religion, I don't like that word, but would religion or God suddenly become more important? The fellow I'm talking about comes here, Craig, was telling me after we saw that, he said, hey, I got to share a testimony. Said his daughter went to Syria on a medical mission. And, you know, they were sharing the gospel and stuff too with Syrians. Of course, Syria is about like Iraq turmoil. And there's tons of people in Syria turning to Jesus Christ, getting saved. And they said the reason why is because they're going through all this stuff, they're going through everything, and Islam is not doing anything for them. It's left them cold, and so now they're interested in Jesus Christ. They're turning to Jesus Christ. And we talked about it. I thought about this myself. I said, well, you know, the thing is, though, when you see something like on the video and you see what's going on with the Christians in Iraq, I mean, couldn't somebody say, well, look, I've turned to Jesus Christ and I'm still walking around with dragging my luggage behind me and don't have a dollar in my pocket and I don't have, you know, look what we're going through and people are being killed and all that. You could say that, but here's the difference. I thought, what's the difference in it? The difference is Jesus Christ is real and Jesus Christ is the truth. And when you got Him in your heart, it don't matter what's going on the outside. You know it's a reality. And the problem is with Islam, you know, it was still going on with you. You got Islam as your religion, and it's a false religion. It's a dead religion. You got that going on in your life, and you're still empty and cold and dead inside, so you're looking for something else. When you get Jesus Christ, it don't matter what's going on in your life. They know that Jesus is real. And them people were singing. They had sing us to shame, man. I mean, they had their hands up. They was praising, boy, and they was in, had all the words in Arabic up there. I couldn't tell what it was, but I could see them all, and the pastor, he was preaching away, and these are people who don't even have a house to live in. They're living in buildings that aren't finished. They don't have any windows and doors. They're living under tents. They got all these tents set up. They're living under awnings that are sticking out, but they're down there at church and they're singing and praising God, and they packed out all the things. But see, it's a real It's a real living relationship with Jesus Christ. It's so much more, man. I don't know what, and if you ever get a taste of the power of God in your life where it's such a real thing, where, and see what happens is God puts us through circumstances in life so that we have to depend on Him. You have to trust in Him. And then once you do that, you'll never be satisfied not having that much faith in your life. When it starts to get shallow, see, that's the thing that gets you. You know, and God can wake us up. So, just got a few points pretty quick. To have that kind of power with God and that kind of a reality in your life, you know, there's some key elements that we have to have in our life, and God helps us. Now, number one thing you have to have is humility. And humility is this, a sense of your own weakness. And like I said, Brother Gibbs, you know, said prosperity's killing us because we just don't think we need God the same way. We like Him. And it's all right. We come down to church when it's okay, convenient, nothing else going on. We'll participate a little bit, but we got a parameter up there that we're not going to go past no matter what happens in our life. We're not going to go any farther with God. And we're not really a living faith where you trust in God and say, God, if you don't lead me today, if you don't lead me, I don't know what to do. I mean, that's a living faith in God. God, if you don't lead me today, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what I'm going to do. We don't do that. And like I said, I don't want to have God do something to me in a critical way to get me to think. You know, I was reading Jacob. We know about Jacob. Remember when Jacob had a wrestling match with God to pre-incarnate Christ all night long? He wrestled with God. Well, if you ever really just break things down just a little bit simpler, you know, to kind of get going on, I was thinking about it. Well, what was God wrestling with Jacob about? He was already what we would call a child of God. He was a descendant of Abraham, so therefore he was in the Abrahamic covenant, and he was in line of Christ. We know it. He was born a twin to Esau, and that he stole the blessing. He connived and stole the blessing from his brother, which God had already promised he was going to get it anyway. He didn't have to do that. But so he was already in line, but he had a match with God after he got between a rock and a hard place. Uncle Laban wanted to kill him on his side. Esau wanted to kill him on this end. He's in the middle. He can't go to Uncle Laban and he can't go to Esau, he don't think. And so he don't know what to do, and he gets to praying to God and he wrestles about it. Well, so what was God wrestling about with him in the start with? Well, what it was, of course, we know his name means deceiver. Which also means conniver or a schemer. He was a schemer, and this is how he operated all through life. Jacob did not operate in the eyes of faith. If he'd operated in the eyes of faith, he wouldn't have had to worry about Esau being the firstborn. The inheritance would have normally gone to the firstborn, but he would have known that since he had a promise from God, he could have trusted God that he was going to get it. He didn't have to worry about it, but he went through an elaborate plan, had to lie to his father. His mother got involved, had to lie to it. He had to finally flee when his brother wanted to kill him. He had to go to Uncle Laban, stayed there 20 years, had to work 14 years for the wife he wanted. Got in trouble there. While he was gone, his mama died. He never saw her again. Then he had to come back. Now he had to leave Uncle Laban and come back to where Esau was and where Esau was going to kill. All his life was a mess because he tried to manipulate his life, himself, the whole time. And so what God wrestled with him all that night, he said, I'm going to wrestle with you till your war slam out. You're not going to win. You're not going to prevail. I can wrestle with you. I can wrestle with one finger with you all night long. Have a cup of tea. Never break a sweat. And you're going to be wrestling and flopping and flipping all night long. You're going to wrestle. I'm going to break you down to where you finally realize you're not strong enough to do it all. That's what he said. He broke him down. He broke Jacob down, and that's where he finally got him. When he finally got to that, he said, you know what? I think God's in this place. You know, God is here. And God touched him in the hollow of his thigh, and guess what? He limped. The Bible said he limped with the rest of his life. Well, when you get kind of crippled up, you know, you kind of got to get some help. I can't even hardly open up a jar anymore. I got arthritis in my finger. I can't eat a honey. Can you open up this for me? She used to bring them to me. Now I got to go to her. I'm going to have to get one of them automatic jar opening things, man. I can't get a grip on it. Huh? You get a limp in your life, and God says, you know what? I'll put you where you're going to have to trust me. You're going to have to trust me. And so he did. And like I said, how do you go through life? Schemes? Do you try to manipulate the circumstance? Do you try to manipulate people to fit your circumstance? Or you go through life thinking that you don't need anybody, including God. Well, I'm going to tell you, I can show you how, and I know you're thinking, you know what the right answer is, right? Oh, no, I don't do that. How's your prayer life? Prayer meeting around here on Wednesday night would not indicate that. There's a lot of people, you know, if you really believe, listen, if I believe right here that I'm pray to God, and listen, God's not a butler. You know, God's not a butler where we're going to get down here and say, okay, God, here's all my needs today. Throw the list out. I'm going to get in here and pray real fervently about it. And God, you meet all my needs. God's not a butler. God, the purpose of prayer is to get God's will done on earth, not your will done on earth. Okay. And so what we get down there and we pray to God, but if I'm really trusting God and God's going to meet my needs and I know that God's going to take care of things and God's going to take care of me, I'll tell you what, I ought to be a praying fool, right? I mean, I ought to be every time there's a prayer meeting, I'm going to be down there praying. As I really believe prayer is going to work, I'm going to do it. But the problem is, it reveals it in your life when your prayer lasts about 20 seconds and your work day and your life and all that lasts the rather 23 and hours and bunch of minutes up to 20 seconds. When your prayer life only lasts that long, it looks to me like you're putting more faith in your life in you than you are putting it in your prayer. Huh? If God said, listen, our prayers would really be, that's how, so how's your prayer life? If you really believe, you know the right answer, that we really let put trust in God, not our conniving and manipulating. You remember what Jesus asked his disciples when he was in the garden? He said, what? He said, couldn't you pray with me for 1 hour? Answer was no. By the way, no, they kept falling asleep. Huh? That's Jesus asking you, can you pray with me for an hour? Huh? Couldn't you? Can you do it? Can you pray with me for an hour? Why don't we do that? Because we don't think we need it. Pride's involved in it, of course. And the only way that God can get us to see things is to break us. And that can be done a multitude of ways. Is it a curse? No, it's a blessing. If God can get you to put faith in Him, whatever He uses to do it is a blessing. It's not a curse. That's why it said and not but over there in Hebrews chapter 11. And then the second thing we see is faith. In chapter 11, verse 6 says, but without faith it is impossible to please Him, for he that cometh to God must believe that He is and that He is a rewarder of them that diligently seek Him. You know, you must believe in God's power and promise. James 1:8 says, a double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. Faith 1 minute and none the next. Boy, like Peter, I think about him. He was up and down all over the faith scale, and that probably typifies the average Christian today. You know, the power on your life. I like to look back in the Old Testament. You look at David and Goliath, man. Here's the whole Israeli army out there quivering in their boots because Goliath, I know he was 9'9". He was big. He was a big man. He's out there in the valley. The whole army's up there shaking. Goliath, one man down there saying, come on down, fight with me. Come on down, fight with me. David rolls up. He's just a boy, 14 years old, maybe something like along that. 14-year-old boy runs up. So what's going on? Goliath down there defying us. And David said, man, he ain't defying you. He's defying the living God. He said, man, somebody go down there and kill him. Oh, no, man. He said, let me have my sling and a rock, man. Saul said, here, we'll take my sword and my spear and all that. David tries it all on. It's all too big because Saul was a big guy. He's, man, that ain't going to work. Let's go down there. I'll just pray to God about it. Went down there with a sling, one shot, pow, right in the head. Kills him, man. Wasn't that David was bigger. Wasn't David was stronger. It was just that he had faith in God. He just said, listen, I got faith in God. And he did something for God. One man wrote this. The most glaring discrepancy in the Christian faith today is between the size of our God and the size of our prayers. Pray. You know, Pastor Frank used to say, aim low, you'll hit it every time. You know, you hit it every time. We don't. Prayer is the arena where our faith meets God's abilities. And somebody else wrote that timid prayer is a waste of time. Timid prayer is a waste of time. Pray big. Pray big. And then the third thing here is perseverance. Jacob, I said, he wrestled all night with God for a blessing. All night. It's evidence. Perseverance, as a matter of fact, in salvation, as far as Christianity goes, is an evidence of genuine salvation. Man, listen, I've seen a lot of people make professions. They run with the horses there for a little while, and then they start falling out. Perseverance, man. I mean, you persevere with God, you stay thick, thin, trials, circumstances. It doesn't matter what it is. You just stick with God. It's in the evidence of things not seen. You know, Abraham never saw most of the promises that God gave him, and he never saw them in his lifetime. He never saw those promises, but he believed those promises. Somebody wrote this to their son. He said, "Consider the postage stamp, my son. Its usefulness consists in sticking to the one thing till it gets there." That's it right there. And then the last thing is holiness. Clean hands and a clean heart. Now, I stated this at the beginning of this message, that the Christians in Iraq had the inn put over their houses, put it on the place of their businesses. Well, how did the people know who to put the inn on? How did they know who was Christians? Just because they had a bumper sticker on the back of their camel that said, you know, my boss is a Jewish carpenter, or, you know, how did they know? No. I'll tell you, but you know, it was because they lived the life. That guy that said, that one man, he said, "I have joy that I'm not a nominal Christian." He said this, he went on to say, he says, "Listen, I'm not a Christian. I'm not a Christian by name. I'm not a Christian by identification card. I'm a Christian because I have a living faith in Jesus Christ, something that shows in my life every single day that I'm putting my faith in Jesus Christ, and I'm not afraid for the world to see. I'm not afraid for the enemy, ISIS right there looking to kill. I'm not afraid for them to see it." There was another guy on there, and he was ready. He said, "Listen," he goes, "my life doesn't belong to me." He said, "I have given," he had a smile on his face, "I have given my life to Jesus Christ." He said, "Nothing can stop me." He said, "I'm not afraid." He said, "If they kill me," one guy said, "if he kills me, to die is gain. That's it." He said, "I'm not afraid. I've given my life to him. I'm in his hands." He said, "Nothing is going to stop me. I don't have a home." He said, "I don't have any food, but it doesn't matter. I'm a child of God. I'm in his hands. Given my life to Jesus Christ." They had joy, they had peace, they sang with all their hearts. And there was this older man, I'm going to get down here to close, and this older man said this, it comes down to this. He said, it comes down to, do you really believe that Jesus Christ is alive and waiting for you? Do you really believe that? All they had to do was deny Christ and keep their lives the same. They didn't do it. Not only they didn't do it, they couldn't do it. You know, you wonder if you're a nominal Christian. Let me give you some questions right here. What bothers you more, a lost soul in hell or a scratch on your new car? You're missing a worship service or missing a day's work? A sermon 10 minutes long or lunch 1/2 hour late? A Bible unopened or a newspaper unread? Missing a good Bible study or your favorite TV show? Your tithes decreasing or your income decreasing? Would they put the inn on your house? On the night of Passover in Egypt, the Passover, the death angel of death looked for the blood on the door post and on the lintel. And one day that's what God's going to be looking for. It's the blood applied by Jesus Christ. He's going to look for the blood. That's all he wants to see. Do you have it? Do you have the blood applied in your life? What about your Christian testimony? Are you a nominal Christian? Or do you want to be more than a nominal Christian? Let's all stand for him.